To my dearest friends, I am honored to welcome you back once more for today's investigation into what is most assuredly the most curious and enigmatic of groups to be found within the already exotic species of the Eldari, being of the remarkable performers of the Harlequins. To most people, the galaxy at large will appear as nothing more than a war-torn hellscape where ancient empires and upstart warlords will fight amidst the ashes of the stars, hoping to claim their singular moment of glory before fading into their inevitable obscurity. But to others, the cosmos is seen as a stage upon which the countless worlds and life forms are damned to play out their endless dramas, only to be observed by an audience of thirsting gods and the ghosts of the fallen. The ancient Eldari are no strangers to tragedy, having experienced the destruction of their empire and wider civilization after a prolonged period of hubris and unabashed debauchery. Broadly speaking, their kind are now split into three main groups, being of the void-dwelling craft-worlders, the perverse artisans of the Drukhari, and of the humble Exodites, living simple lives upon secretive maiden worlds. But, as we will soon learn, there is actually a fourth group who exist within their species, and they would be known as the Harlequins. They are not necessarily to be seen as a normal part of Eldari society, nor as a faction which holds comparable numbers to any of the aforementioned groups, yet they undoubtedly stand as some of the most unique of individuals ever documented within their species. In a sense, they are wandering troubadours, traversing the vast enormity of the cosmos to perform, dance, and sometimes kill in their pursuit of serving Segorach, the laughing god of the old pantheon. Where the other Eldari gods were torn apart by the birth of Slaanesh, Segorach was one of the few figures to slip away into the shadows, and it is currently thought that the great fool now resides within the impossible labyrinth of the Webway, protecting the souls of his devoted followers. But for the Harlequins, they live to perform the great dance, acting out the tragic scenes of the galaxy so as to honor the memories of the fallen, stoke the fires of vengeance against their foes, and to tell the prophetic tale of their species' eventual rebirth. The greatest of tales would be the so-called dance, which showcases the fall of the Eldari Empire, culminating in a climactic scene where Slaanesh enters the stage, destroys their civilization, then enters into an unending battle with the Laughing God. Though the Harlequins have been known to occasionally perform to the lesser species of the galaxy, this singular dance is only ever to be witnessed by the Eldari themselves, as it is a tale most emotional and most personal to the fading ancients. Audiences seldom forget their experiences if they are lucky enough to witness a Harlequin performance, with some leaving so shaken by the sheer artistic majesty that they never dare to speak of it again, as any comparison would be found lacking to that form of dramatic perfection. Quite interestingly, the Harlequins are not merely to be confined to the stage, as they are often known to fight upon the myriad battlefields of the galaxy, where they employ the same flamboyant theatricality, only this time applied within the art of war. They will leap, twirl, and somersault through the air, cutting down foes with such style and grace that one may almost call it beautiful, if of course beauty can be found in bloodshed. To a guardsman, this would be the stuff of nightmares, witnessing a lithe and costumed performer dancing through their platoon, casting out a visage of death from the blood of their comrades. To an orc, however, a Harlequin would likely confound them, leaving them scratching their head at why a pointy-eared clown is sauntering towards them through the thick of battle. But nevertheless, today we shall be exploring them in more detail, First, by learning of who the Harlequins were before the fall, and of how they ended up as galactic performers and as devotees to the Laughing God. After, we will explore the concept of the mask and of their performances, including a segment on how they act when in the dramatic theater of war. To end, I will explore their role within the Eldari species, and then reveal the fascinating story of the figures known only as the Solitaires. For now, however, we should waste no more time. And so, my dearest friends, I do believe that it is now time for us to begin. So let us sit back and watch as the curtains rise and as the play begins anew, as the galactic stage is most assuredly set, and all that is left to do is to soak in the artistic mastery of the enigmatic Harlequins. To understand the Harlequins, we must first step into the shadowy realms of myth, for their tale is one which began in a bygone age, long before the Imperium of Man first took form, and one where the cosmos was held in the delicate palms of the Eldari. It is a story frequently told by the Harlequins as a part of their great dance. Yet, as I mentioned in our introduction, they will seldom share this knowledge with the wider species of the galaxy. Nevertheless, from our myriad sources, we have managed to piece together their tale, and rather tragically, it all revolves around their fall. The Eldari, once the rulers of their vast, star-spanning empire, sadly fell to ruin through their own embrace of excess. In their decadence, they brought about the birthing of a god, being of none other than Slaanesh, the Prince of Pleasure, who now eternally thirsts for the delectable taste of bright Eldari souls. In that apocalyptic moment, their pantheon of gods was destroyed, being utterly torn apart by the newborn entity's insatiable hunger. Only a scant few managed to escape destruction, though it was almost impossible to seek safe refuge from the cataclysm. Isha, the motherly goddess of fertility, was saved from death by Nurgle, though she now lives imprisoned within his fetid garden, secretly whispering the cures to his many diseases to the mortal species of the galaxy. Cain, the god of war, was shattered into countless shards, which took form as the frozen avatars, who may now be resurrected by the sacrifice of an exarch, given the moniker of the young king. But the third to survive was one who escaped, not by some act of strength or defiance, but by a deft play of trickery. This was Tsegorach, the laughing god. In Eldari legends, he laughed even as the heavens burned, slipping through the invasive grasp of Slaanesh with a jest, a flourish, and a mocking bow. Some say he hid in the folds of the webway, dancing from shadow to shadow until he disappeared from reality entirely. Others claim he simply made himself too absurd for Slaanesh to comprehend, a joke so perfectly executed that the Prince of Pleasure was left with mere wisps of smoke and an undying shame to consume. But even a joke requires a stage, and for Tsegorach, that stage was the Webway, a realm older than the Eldari Empire itself. First woven by the psychic Old Ones, it became a hidden artery of the galaxy, existing between the dimensional planes of reality, though it was later inherited by the Eldari following the fabled war in heaven, where it became one of their greatest and most defining of assets. On the topic, there is in fact an Eldari myth which states that it was Tsegorach who tricked the Catan into consuming each other during the war, though the official story reads that it was the Deceiver who betrayed his kind. In any event, following the birth of Slaanesh, the Laughing God did indeed dance into the deepest roots of the Webway, vanishing from our mortal realms as the only God to escape unscathed. But what does all this talk of gods have to do with the Harlequins? Well, they see Segorach as their patron, and even before the Eldari fall, they were his devout followers, dancing and acting so as to imitate and revere his essence. In the heyday of their species, the Harlequins were still performers, though they typically acted out plays which foretold the dangers of their emergent debauchery, prophesizing the great fall long before it ever took root. This was not taken well by the audiences, who reacted violently at being told that their lives were impure and decadent, thus necessitating the dancers to become expert duelists purely to protect themselves from the offensive backlash. It is said that in the days preceding the fall, that the Harlequins had already started their exodus into the Webway, where they were soon to be met by Segorach to establish their new home within the labyrinth. With that said, they were not to remain in isolation. And after several millennia, the mask of the Midnight Sorrow emerged from the darkness of the Webway, arriving as the salvation to the maiden world of Lion Nuad, to banish a Slaanesi host who had come to devour the souls of the Eldari. Since then, they have been seen countless times across the galaxy, often appearing to protect their species before dancing back into their home of the Webway. None are quite sure what their lives are like, though, as I previously mentioned, they will routinely perform the stories of the cosmos to many a captive audience, showcasing the ever-present dangers of hedonism, whilst also remembering the lives lost during the Great Fall. Every Harlequin will belong to a group known as a mask, who to an outside observer might appear as nothing more than a wandering troupe, or as a baroque carnival of acrobats and killers. This, however, is a gross oversimplification of the matter. Each mask exists as a great company of troops, consisting of dozens of players united under a shared identity and style, whilst upholding a specific creed and facet of the Laughing God. Some masks are rather somber, with their performances being steeped in tragedy and solemn prophecy, often ending with a forlorn message as to the hubris which inevitably comes with life. Others, however, revel in manic absurdity, with their stages filled by a blur of color and their audiences captivated by a laughter which borders on hysteria. All, however, are bound to the concept of a dance without end. The masks will tell their own stories, though all will regularly perform the same saga, recalling the rise and fall of the Eldari, the birth of Slaanesh, the survival of Segorach, and the final struggle yet to come. But each retelling will be slightly different, filtered through the unique personality of the mask itself. It can be quite interesting to compare them to a hall of mirrors, where the same story is endlessly witnessed, though always slightly different, and with a tale as tragic as the Eldari's, it truly can be seen as timeless. Within their mask, the players will take on their roles for life, primarily because they do not see themselves as individuals in the same way that a human might. First and foremost, they are the masks they wear, and this persona is far more important than the living individual who resides beneath. To don the costume of a death jester is to surrender oneself to that mocking specter of fate as an eternal fool who finds even the smallest mote of humor in every great tragedy. To walk as a shadow seer, however, is to accept the burden of guiding others with prophetic visions of the future, interpreting the weave of destiny like an actor improvising on a script which none others can see. The dance of a solitaire, meanwhile, is to bear aloft that which is truly impossible. They are never to be permanently associated with a mask, as they have been selected to walk the path of damnation, surrendering their souls to Slaanesh, so that they may play the part of She Who Thirsts during the Great Dance. We will speak of them more in a later chapter, but they are to be considered as true soloists, utterly essential to the story of the Eldari, yet never embraced by the kinship of a mask. But even these figures of doom require a supporting cast, and so we return to the troops, which are small bands who form the beating heart of every mask. They are quite small, though are incredibly tight-knit, being as close as a family to one another, though in truth they are far stranger than a family, as their loyalty is as much held to the story as it is to each other. A Harlequin's life is an endless tour where they travel the hidden arteries of the webway, appearing without warning upon craft worlds within the dark stages of Komorar and before mortal rulers who cannot comprehend what they are seeing. They will arrive, perform, and then vanish in an astonishing spectacle, leaving behind audiences filled with awe, confusion, and often sheer terror. These performances are by no means to be seen as optional viewing, as when a mask arrives, the audience will truly be captive, being seated in attendance whether they wish to or not. To refuse is to insult the laughing god himself, and the Harlequins simply cannot forgive such a slight. In some respects, we could see their performances as liturgical, perhaps comparing them to a priestly cast of a conventional civilization, though this is only a loose comparison intended to demonstrate the reverential respect they hold for their craft. Sometimes their dances will be performed as a subtle warning to the audience, providing a meaningful lesson disguised as a fable or delivering a poignant threat, only veiled in many layers of irony and allegory. To witness one of these performances is to experience a thousand emotions at once, and it has been said that individuals from the lesser species of the galaxy have been driven to abject madness from trying to interpret that which they saw. The audience will be drawn into the dance, with their laughter rising like a tide, then struck down without warning by incomparable grief, before an overwhelming terror closes in like the darkest of shadows. The Harlequins play not only with costume and gesture, but with their psychic presence, ensnaring the minds of the audience, pulling their heartstrings along with every beat and their souls with every daring pirouette. In the end, all will emerge transformed, sometimes shaken and broken so as to cripple their thoughts, whilst others will be emboldened, being more ready to defend their worlds against an unknown threat that would have otherwise gone unnoticed. But within this, there is humor. It is sharp, cruel, and often unbearable, but it is still humor nonetheless. The Harlequins laugh at their foes, their allies, at themselves, and even at their god. At the center of every catastrophe, there is farcical humor, and amidst even a massacre can be found a flourish of absurdity, for comedy and tragedy are but two masks worn by the same performer of life. Of course, this is not comedy born out of joy, but of survival, as it is in fact the desperate and absurd laughter of those who have known the abyss, yet still chose to grin. Many Imperials who have learnt of the Harlequins will dismiss them as jesters and fools, but such people have never witnessed a true performance, nor embraced the arts as anything but a critic. To see a Harlequin troupe in battle is to witness a play without an audience, though perhaps it is more accurate to say that the audience is unwillingly drafted into what will most assuredly be a blood-soaked performance. For the Harlequins, war is not a separate stage, as at the end of the day it is all still theatre, and it is but another act in which to retell the violent story of their people. Their enemies may falsely believe that the dancing Eldari are fighting for territory, or perhaps even wealth, but their goals are often far more enigmatic. An attack might be performed so as to prevent the spread of a brutal warlord who in many decades would have eventually arrived upon an Exodite world, or against an imperial governor who would one day discover a halo device spelling the doom of a subsector once useful for their species. But in a battle, where others might march, the Harlequins will glide. A conventional army might charge, but they will leap. Barbaric orcs might look to bludgeon their adversaries, but the Harlequins will fight so gracefully that their arts of death make them appear to be flying. They typically move with a sense of alacrity that would otherwise be considered as impossible, bounding through the air with flip belts that temporarily make gravity but an afterthought. Their forms shimmer with the strange projections of their hollow suits, making them seem as though they were illusions, refracting through a battlefield, so that every Harlequin seems a dozen, and every dozen seems an army. Their armory has been designed with the same dramatic flair. After all, why simply cut down a man when you could turn his innards into crimson ribbons to amaze a captive audience? The most infamous of these would likely be the weapon known as the Harlequin's Kiss. It appears as a slender wrist-mounted tube, which may be thrust into an enemy before unleashing a torrent of monofilament wire, uncoiling and blossoming within their target, reducing organs and bones to a mere slurry of meaty pulp. The caress is another close combat weapon, which envelops the hand of its user in a confounding phase shield, allowing them to pass through almost any object, which in practice would allow a Harlequin to reach into one's chest and directly rip out their heart. For ranged tools, the Death Jesters will carry shrieker cannons, which fire a form of ammunition known to the Eldar as Margrech. And these are a modified version of the common shurikens, though they are imbued with a virulent toxin known to react and adapt to their target's specific biology. Their kind are also known to use hallucinogenic grenades, with the complex gases causing a victim to lash out in confusion, suddenly lost within the nightmare of their own imagination. Similarly, the mist staves of the Shadow Seers will also cause an opponent to suffer from a horrifying illusionary vision, though this will be designed by the wielder so as to cause as much terror as humanly possible. The unlucky adversaries of a Harlequin troop will not only be killed, but also disoriented, outplayed, and in the final moments of their life, humiliated. The Harlequins fight with laughter, masks stuck in an eternal grin, as their foes stumble and flail about in impotent terror. They will be mocked with cruel pantomimes, mimicking an intricate and painful death before violently executing them. It must be quite a demoralizing experience to realize that your death is being performed before your very eyes, and that you are simply helpless to prevent it. The Harlequins are quite a rare force to encounter, and in truth, most within the galaxy have no idea that they even exist. Still, there are hushed rumors within the Imperial Guard, telling of a group of brightly colored Eldari jesters cartwheeling through Lasfire, carrying blades flashing in arcs too fast for human eyes to follow. Though the Space Marines truly know no fear, there is little relish to be found in facing an opponent who may phase through their armor, simply to prove that they are too slow to ever catch them. Even the orcs, who would have a hearty laugh at crushing puny Eldari heads, will find their laughter hollow when the jester's blades carve through a mob faster than even the scampiest little grot. But with all that said, due to their limited numbers, the Harlequins must be incredibly pragmatic in matters of war. They cannot ever commit themselves to a battle if they are not entirely sure that the fates are on their side, and so they will strike with the precision of a surgeon, hitting hard and fast at the most vulnerable of targets before vanishing back into the webway, leaving only stories of their presence in their wake. Entire wars have been halted from such approaches, with warlords being assassinated mid-battle, sorcerers slain before a ritual could be completed, or a chaotic gate destroyed in the exact moment before it opened. The survivors of such battles will be left confounded, as where victory once seemed assured. They will only be left with a surreal vista of death, wondering if what they saw was real at all, or if they were just caught in some hallucinatory nightmare. Though they do indeed call the Webway as their home, the Harlequins are known to appear across the entirety of the Eldari territories, showing no discrimination against their kin, even to those who have chosen to live a dark life within the city of Komora. Sometimes they arrive as allies, sometimes as enemies, but most often they are mere guests, though of course they need no permissions, nor any invitations to arrive, as they acknowledge no borders, save for the ones they choose to cross. To the Craftworlders, the Harlequins are tolerated with a kind of wary reverence, as they naturally fall outside of the typical Asuriani system. And this difference can often lead to an aura of suspicion. Still, they come and go as they please, unchallenged by even the sternest Farseer or most zealous of Ortarch. For all their aloofness, the Craftworlders do understand that the Harlequins are the custodians to their species' ancient lore, and without their performances, their kin may be doomed to one day forget their own past. All will gather upon a craft world for their performances, sitting in grim silence until the pandemonium of a dance may begin. Children laugh and weep, warriors freeze, transfixed at the movements, and even the wisest of seers lean forward to catch the hidden meanings behind every gesture. I will note here that any Eldari may one day be chosen to become a Harlequin, but their recruitment practices are one of the primary reasons as to why the Craftworlders hold them with a sense of suspicion. In a busy crowd, an individual may be drawn to the curious sight of a grinning mask, beckoning them towards a passageway they never noticed. And if they follow, they will surely vanish, only to emerge within the very heart of the Webway, destined to be reborn as a member of a troop. They will never be allowed to return to their home and must forfeit everything from their old life, devoting themselves to the service of the Laughing God and to the great dance without end. I will also mention that to the Harlequins, the role they are assigned within a troop will eventually overtake their personal identity, to the point where they see their mask and their character as being more real and more true than of anything they experienced in their old life. But in any event, the Drukhari will also be suspicious of the Harlequins, though I would expect that a similar level of distrust is held towards the sadists by the jesters. Their performances will be held unexpectedly to a myriad of different crowds, sometimes replacing the gladiatorial games of a witch cult, and sometimes being held in the Undercity, solely to be witnessed by crowds of doomed slaves. The Drukhari might initially sneer, but as soon as the play begins, they will be enraptured and enthralled, just as much as any other mortal of the galaxy. None will ever dare to interrupt, as even in that city of knives, the Harlequins are untouchable. It is said that to spill the blood of a Harlequin would be to invoke total disaster, as the Laughing God's vengeance will make even the most creative of homunculus appear tame in comparison. Besides the dangers, the Harlequins offer the Dark Kin something that they rarely admit to crave, being of a remembrance to their old state of unity and glory, which would normally be a memory they despise. But when presented by a Harlequin, it becomes something that simply cannot be resisted. Some Drukhari have been transformed into Harlequins, though in the Dark City, this often occurs due to a braggadocio's Kabbalite wagering against the jesters in a game of chance, and very few will ever learn the lesson of not to gamble with a troupe of traveling performers. Among the Exodites, scattered upon their remote and idyllic worlds, the Harlequins are welcomed as guests, seen as another form of outcast, though undoubtedly a little strange in their nature. They retell the sagas of the Pantheon beneath starlit skies, reminding those scattered enclaves that they are still Eldari, no matter how far they have traveled from the ancient heart of their people. For the Exodites, the Harlequins are far less disturbing than the cruel Drukhari, or rigid craftworlders, and they have come to accept that from time to time one of their kind might go missing, lost in their following of an echoing laughter, last heard through an unused gate to the webway. But it is not only the Eldari who find themselves as an audience to the mask. The Harlequins have been known to perform for humans too, sometimes even sharing in their stories with individuals who are on the brink of obtaining their forbidden knowledge. Such encounters are always infrequent and bewildering, as the Eldari will provide no explanations nor farewells, only performing their dance before vanishing, leaving the humans with a feeling that they have merely been made a pawn in some cosmic joke. When not performing, the Harlequins are thought to guard the labyrinth of the webway, though they pay particular heed to protecting the mysterious and unknowable contents of the Black Library. Hidden deep within that interdimensional realm contains the forbidden collection of all Eldari lore, with every last scrap of knowledge saved from their old civilization being sealed away, never to be seen by any, lest granted permission by the library itself. The most valuable knowledge would be of their vast understanding of chaos, with many an aspiring intruder seeking to gain entry purely to strengthen their own powers against the forces of the warp. The most notable of these would be Ahriman, sorcerer of the Thousand Suns, who believes that his entry will allow him to reverse the terrible rubric and restore life to the brothers who were reduced to mere ash. Amidst their collection is said to be a complete copy of the Book of Magnus, a map of the entire webway, the secrets behind reversing time, a tome written in the crystal tears of Isha, and even a single page spelling out the true name of the Emperor of Man. Very few have ever been permitted to enter, and none can quite determine as to the reasons behind their acceptance. Some who seem worthy will be turned away, whereas other, unlikely candidates will be quietly ushered in. Perhaps the laughing god whispers the decisions to his servants. Perhaps it is all down to whimsy, or perhaps, more alarmingly, it is all part of an ancient script, with each visitor merely playing their expected part. Whatever the truth, the Harlequins guard the Black Library with absolute devotion, and none, not even the greatest of Eldari seers or the darkest of Drukhari archons, would ever dare contest them for it. For all that can be said of the Harlequins, on their plays, their weapons, their roles in the galactic scene, there is far more that cannot be spoken with certainty. They are a group who thrive in illusion, with every truth obfuscated behind so many layers of riddles that you will be left completely uncertain as to their actual nature. For one to study them, they will quickly find themselves chasing mere shadows, cataloging absolute contradictions to every known fact, whilst coming no closer to the question of who really are the Harlequins. But at the center of this question, we will find the solitaire. Solitaires are without a doubt the most feared, most revered, and most pitied of all Harlequins, and whose life is most easily defined as a pure tragedy. While every troupe enacts the great dance, with each role serving as a living archetype of Eldari myth, they must admit to themselves that there is one terrible part to be played, so dark that none would ever dare to take it. That part is of Slaanesh, the Prince of Pleasure, and the grand architect to the doom of their entire species. Thus the role falls to the solitaire. Yet, as we must remember, the Harlequins see their roles as being more true than of life itself, and so this figure must become so closely aligned with the god of excess that they lose a part of their souls in doing so. Legends say that the solitaires are all chosen by Segorach, though we have no real way of knowing how the laughing god determines which of his servants will abandon their lives and become doomed in the process. What we do know, however, is that the individual will be forced to walk the path of damnation, treading the forlorn roads which have so often led their kin into the dark arms of chaos. Make no mistake, for this will destine that solitaire to death, for in becoming the living echo of Slaanesh, the figure must forfeit their soul. All Eldari fear the predation of she who thirsts, and all know that their souls are in constant peril, lest they be preserved by an infinity circuit or by the dark bargains of Komorar. The solitaire, however, has no such reprieve, and no soulstone may preserve them in that final act. Their essence has already been marked, already promised, and already tasted by the darkest of gods. Yet still, they dance. Their role within the Eldari performance is unmatched, being said to be the most spectacular feat of drama ever to exist in galactic history. They will glide across a stage, silent, masked, and untouchable, seen as a vile pariah, yet one so perfected that none could possibly look away. Upon a battlefield, however, the solitaire becomes a terror beyond reckoning. They move with a speed that is beyond imagining, darting between foes like a shadow split into 100 fragments. Entire squads will be cut down before they can raise their weapons, but their deaths will be punctuated with silence rather than laughter. Where the rest of the troop fights with color and spectacle, the solitaire merely moves as an inevitable force of death, serving as the darkest of reminders that all joy will one day wither and all life will inevitably end. But some will say that the solitaire's soul does not entirely belong to Slaanesh, and that the laughing god watches over his most tragic actors, simply waiting for the final jest to be revealed. In the Harlequin's own mythos, it reads that Segorach plays a long game, weaving schemes so impossible that not even chaos can untangle them. In those tales, the solitaire is as much a sacrifice as they are a weapon, being marked for damnation only until the climax, where they fade into black, revealing only the smiling face of the laughing god, ready to duel with Slaanesh and deal a fatal strike. But with Harlequins, every tale wears another mask, and some will whisper that the solitaires are not real Eldari, and that they are in fact vessels to Segorach, with the god using them as extensions of himself so as to play mischievous tricks upon the unsuspecting souls of the galaxy. Whether such stories are hope, deceit, or the truth will likely remain unknown. Some have said that the answer lies within the Black Library, in a book forbidden to all but Segorach himself, and as such, we shall never be privy to one of the galaxy's greatest mysteries. But the solitaire is not the only enigma, as the Harlequins themselves are quite unknowable by their very nature. Their actions have certainly shaped the course of galactic history, but why do they intervene where they do? Why assassinate one warlord, but save another? Why allow one inquisitor into the Black Library while barring another of arguably purer will? Perhaps it is all whimsy. Perhaps it is all part of some grand design. But perhaps the Harlequins themselves do not know, and maybe they only continue to dance to the tune of their god while never questioning who writes the music. The galaxy is filled with factions who claim absolute certainty in their actions, but the Harlequins claim nothing, and they only laugh in the faces of those who do. Their only certainty is the inevitability of the final act, where the stage goes dark and where the curtains close. What part they play in that finale, none can say. And so, the curtain falls, though only for a moment. The Harlequins vanish as suddenly as they came, masks gleaming in the dark one last time, before dissolving into the shadows of the webway. But their stage is never still, and their performance never finished. For while the conventional factions of the galaxy count their victories and amass their resources, the Harlequins only look towards the next scene and towards their next role in one long play destined someday to end, though without a living audience, save for the thirsting gods who watch from the wings. In them, we find the entire tragedy of the Eldari species. They are wanderers without a home, yet in spite of the horrors, they persist, carrying with them the weight of their people's memory to wherever it is they dance. They are killers, topplers of empires, and assassins of kings, with their blades carving out new stories in blood across every battlefield they touch. Some would see them as jesters without joy or as prophets without a cause, but none will ever know their truth, for none will ever be privileged enough to peer behind the mask. And through it all, they laugh. Not with the boisterous laughter of pleasure, but with the laughter of those who understand the absurd joke at the heart of the universe, that empires fall, heroes die, and that even in the end, the gods will fade. They are the Eldari's last shred of mockery, their species' final laugh, hurled without reason into the all-consuming abyss. They might appear as incomprehensible, yet they are assuredly undeniable, for none can refuse the coming of a play, nor ignore the underlying message. The Harlequins will arrive, then perform, and then leave, with nothing being left quite the same in their wake. The absurdity of their presence in this, our time of ending, where the Imperium of Man seems to be crumbling to its knees, is nothing short of a joke in of itself. But maybe they are merely the uninvited dancers at the galaxy's funeral. In the end, the Harlequins remind us that every story is also a performance, that every truth may be a dramatic mask, and where every war is but a scene upon the stage of history. The galaxy may burn, but they will still be there, laughing and dancing away, for theirs is the dance without end, and its final act has yet to be played. And thus, with this, my dearest friends, I do believe that we must close the curtains on our own exploration and bring our journey to its end. Thank you so much for listening to this investigation into the mysterious Harlequins in its entirety, and I do hope that you enjoyed our little play. But for now, as has become our habit, I must close this chapter once more, and so, as I go, and as the lights go dim, I will wish you all with a very warm goodbye.